Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of another UFC event. UFC St. Louis went down this past Saturday. It was interesting. It was an interesting event, to say the least. Some big things have come out of it. Some news has released regarding UFC events. We'll get to that in just a moment, but we will be covering all the fights that went down on this card and talking about what could be next for some of the winners and even some of the losers. As well, we will be checking in with the NBA and NHL as their playoffs rage on. We're actually going to be discussing, just about right to kick off the episode, some new UFC fights that they just announced that I am absolutely pumped for. One of my favorite, a couple of my favorite fighters are going to be on those fights as well. We are going to be giving our official spoiler review of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, one of my favorite movies of the year, and we do our top 10 ranking at the end of 2024. It is definitely going to be in the top 10, so stick around till the end to check out my full review for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I am fresh off of my first day on my internship, and let me just tell you, these 9-hour days are no joke. I'm a little tired, a little groggy, but we're going to suck it up. We're going to get through this episode and bring you guys some excitement and maybe even some surprises, as this is the Surprise Jab Podcast. So let's get right on into it, ladies and gentlemen. Kicking us off, of course, new UFC fights. Every episode we talk about new UFC fights. In the past, 3 days, if you will, 2 days, we've received just only five, but like all five I find are pretty interesting matchups. Our first one, we go to the men's middleweight division as Kevin Holland is back. Kevin Holland is ranked 14th at welterweight, but hey, he's coming into this fight against Michael Oleksijczyk at UFC 302 June 1st in Newark, New Jersey. I'm excited to see Kevin Holland come back. He is fresh off his loss to MVP Michael Venom Page, but he's hungry, he's coming back, and he's back at middleweight. That's where he used to fight, but he's been down in welterweight, hasn't treated him too kindly last time out. We'll see if he can get down against Michael Hussar Oleksijczyk. Michael is 19-7 professionally, 7-5 in the UFC. I think he did just lose to Michelle Pereira in round one, not but 2 months ago or something. So that's unfortunate, but that should be an absolute banger. And it's on the main card. Dana White announced that. Also, Dana White announcing, not to jump right into it, but the UFC is moving away from Apex events this year. That's right. We are doing full crowd events from now on. After 2024 is absolutely electric. I'm so excited. I cannot believe that's actually happening. And the UFC actually listened to their fans. I think they realized they were putting on absolutely terrible cards at the Apex. So I think we just have a couple into June, maybe July. Then once August hits, we should be done for the year. Only have like one or two every few months. So that's exciting. That is some great news. I'm so happy Dana White elected to go with that. Another fight that is announced, which was actually going down at UFC Vegas 94, they might actually get to 100 Apex events, and then they might stop since they're already at 94, which is booked for July 20th, and a fight was announced in the featherweight division between Bill Algeo and the Korean Superboy, Doo Ho Choi. He is back. Doo Ho Choi is back. I have been waiting for his return. He is so fun. 2-time performance of the night winner, 3-time fight of the night winner, a fight of the year winner. This guy's absolutely electric. Bill Algeo, he just lost, I think, to... actually, did he just beat Alexander Hernandez? I can't remember. No, he just lost to Kyle Nelson. Bill Algeo just got TKO'd in round one by Kyle Nelson. Doo Ho Choi hasn't fought since 2022, I'm pretty sure. This should be a fun fight. I'm excited for it. You already know I'm rooting for the Korean Superboy, Doo Ho Choi, who is 15-4 professionally, but of those four losses, three of them are in the UFC. So he'll definitely need to win this one if he wants to stay. Moving to the flyweight division, this one is electric. UFC 304 in Manchester, England. The undefeated number 6 ranked Muhammad Mokaev, 12-0 professionally, 6-0 in the UFC, takes on the star boy, Manel Cape, ranked number 7, fresh off of his win over Felipe Dos Santos in September. This is an absolute banger. This is a title eliminator. Winner of this is getting a flyweight title shot. I kid you not. Muhammad Mokaev has ran through just about everyone except his last opponent, Alex Perez, who did give him some trouble, but he was able to get the decision. Meanwhile, Manel Cape started off his UFC career pretty bad. Lost 2 decisions, just didn't really do anything in them. Mind you, those losses were to Mathias Nicolau and the current champion Alexander Pantoja. Didn't really take any damage in those fights since then. He has just ran through about everyone. Felipe Dos Santos had a fight the night against him, knocking out Ode Osborne, knocking out Zalagas Umalagov, knocking out David Dork. Manel Cape's been on a run. I'm excited to see this one. I'm torn, though. This is a striker versus a grappler. And, you know, those either work out where the wrestler gets knocked out or the striker gets taken down. We'll see what happens. That's going to be a banger and definitely on the main card of UFC 304. I'm so curious to see what the main event's going to be for that. Maybe Leon Edwards, maybe Tom Aspinall. I don't know, guys. We're going to have to see. That's for sure. Another fight announced in the men's flyweight division. This one even crazier than the last. UFC Vegas 93, June 15th. We have the main event, and it is absolutely wild, as number 5 ranked Alex Perez, who is turning around for another fight, takes on the undefeated number 13th ranked Tatsuro Taira. 15-0 professionally, 5-0 in the UFC. My boy Tatsuro Taira from Japan is getting a huge shot in this one. And Alex Perez, fresh off of his just beautiful knockout of Matthias Nicolau, so happy to see him making a quick turn on. But Tatsuro Taira, it is his time, without a doubt. Without a doubt, we're riding with Tatsuro Taira. So excited for that fight, because originally it was supposed to be Alex Perez versus Taguro Lambekov, and then Tatsuro Taira versus Joshua Van. But they did a little switcheroo. So on that same card, UFC Vegas 93, the number 12 ranked Taguro Lambekov will take on the unranked Joshua Fearless Van, 10-1 professionally, 3-0 in the UFC. Joshua Van has taken all those fights on short notice and dominated them. He's so fun. I love Joshua Van. And I think the UFC kind of realized they had stars in Van and Taira, and they're like, why should we put these two guys who are 10-1 and 15-0 against each other on some prelims when we can have them fight some actual contenders who are ranked and could potentially become ranked themselves? So exciting things for that event. Even though it's an Apex card, you know, this is exactly what Apex cards should be about, bringing up-and-coming talent, giving them a big shot. It shouldn't be Marcin Tybura versus Taito Vaza. It shouldn't be Rose Namajunas versus Amanda Ribas. We should not be doing those types of fights. So excited to see those fights, excited for those guys. And honestly, of all the fights I just listed, give me Kevin Holland, give me Sungwoo Choi, give me Duho Choi, give me Manel Cape over Muhammad Mukhaev, honestly. Give me Tetsuro Taira, and give me Joshua Van. We're rooting for all the underdogs in all these fights. It's super exciting, and we'll just see what happens. All those fights are coming up within the next 2 months. Exciting. Also, what's been somewhat exciting, depending on what fan base you go with, is the NBA playoffs. NBA playoffs still going on. Interesting stuff happening in them for sure. As of right now, I mean, the series are all getting pretty even. No one's really pulling away. Most recently, over the past weekend, we saw the Mavericks jump out to a 2-1 series lead over the Thunder, taking Game 3. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, of course, dropping 31 points, was absolutely dominant as always. Chet Holmgren only 13, Jalen Williams only 16. It was all Mavericks all day. Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic both get 22. P.J. Washington, 27. Okay, P.J. Washington, their starting power forward, an absolute dog. Since when is he just decided to become an absolute stud? Other than that, I mean, nothing too special. Nothing too special. You look at the stats, pretty even game down the stretch. At the end of the day, you know, Mavericks had one more free throw than them. They also had 7 more rebounds. So rebounding was a key to the Mavericks jumping out to that lead. They will play in Game 4 tonight. Tonight, Monday, was it May 13th? They'll play at 8:30. We're currently recording this at 6:37. So obviously, I'm going to ride with the Mavericks. You know, I like Luka Doncic. I like Kyrie Irving. This Thunder team, I do not really want to play them, personally, if I'm a Timberwolf. But speaking of the Timberwolves, I don't even know if we're going to make it to the conference finals, as we lost to the Nuggets at home again. Of course, we got blown up by 27 the other night, and just nothing went right. Nothing went right in Game 4. We were always just a step behind. And I mean, Nikola Jokic, 35 points. He just goes in the paint and scores. He is beautiful at basketball. He's your MVP. Timberwolves just couldn't stop him. Timberwolves just could not stop him. We held Jamal Murray in check, 19 points, but he was held in check. Michael Porter Jr. held only 4 points. Aaron Gordon had 27. He didn't miss a shot. 11 for 11. And who else was scoring out here? We held Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to 3. Christian Braun getting 11 and Justin Holley getting 10 really hurt. And Reggie Jackson drilling just 2 dagger threes every time he was in. Just a killer. It sucked. And by the way, we scored 107 points. 44 of those from Anthony Edwards. Cat only gets 13 points. 12 boards was helpful, but was not shooting well. Jaden McDaniels had 11. He fulfilled his role. Rudy Gobert, 11. 14 boards. He did his role. Mike Conley had 15, you know. But Nick Alexander-Walker, 24 minutes. Only 2 points. Missed all his threes. Naz Reid had 11. He was trying his hardest. And Kyle Anderson, 6 minutes played, did nothing. Did absolutely nothing. We out-rebounded them. We almost out-assisted them. I mean, we did pretty much everything to out-shoot them. Nuggets, 57%. Timberwolves, 47.6%. Don't know what's going to happen. Coming down to the wire, but the Thunder and Nuggets, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they wind up playing. Nuggets, oh man, I have no thoughts. I have no thoughts on that. I really hope we win, but the momentum has changed. After winning our first 6 playoff games, we have now dropped the last 2. Moving into the Eastern Conference, currently going on right now, the Celtics are playing the Cavaliers, and they hold a 2-1 series lead. They won Game 3, 106-93. Jason Tatum, 33 points, performing as he should. 13 boards as well, might I add. Jaylen Brown, 28 points, 9 rebounds. Jrue Holiday, 18 points, 8 rebounds. Rebounding machines from the guards. Al Horford, only 2 points. Peyton Pritchard, only 5. And man, the Cavaliers held without Donovan Mitchell for this upcoming game that's going on tonight. He did drop 33 in Game 3, but it was enough. Darius Garland, Caris LeVert both get 15. Evan Mobley, 17. Max Strus, your starting small forward, only 6 points. Ugh, just gross. Just gross. Celtics looking to continue their domination. Cavaliers looking to do the best to stay in it. But Celtics are the favorite, best team in the league this season. We'll see if it carries on into game number 4. Speaking of game 4s, the Pacers beating the Knicks to even up the series 2-2, and not just beating them, blowing them out by 32 points. 32 points. I mean, the lead, the biggest lead at one point, I think was almost 40. It might have been 40. Pacers were in their bag. Just utter domination. Tyrese Haliburton gets 20 points, TJ McConnell 15, Pascal Siakam 14, Miles Turner 13. It was a team effort all around. Obi Toppin off the bench 14. Knicks, I mean, Alec Burks was your leading scorer with 20. Brunson had 18, Miles McBride off the bench 16. Your starters, Dante DiVincenzo, 7 points. Isaiah Hartenstein, 4 points. Precious Achiuwa, 8 points. Josh Hart, 2 points. What went wrong? What went wrong in this game? I do not know. I have no idea. I mean, Knicks only shot 33.7%. There, I can tell you is the issue. There, when you're shooting 33.7% as a team, you only made 7 threes and you shot 37. Ugh, 22 for 31 from the line. They were at the line so much. Got out rebounded, gave up 52 rebounds to the Pacers. The momentum has shifted in that series for certain. As we look at the games right now, Celtics are currently up 46-33 in the second quarter. And, of course, we know the Thunder and the Mavericks will play later tonight. My predictions now, it's honestly looking like the Nuggets might win that series. Honestly, Maverick might take their series. Celtics win their series. And I still got right at the Knicks, though. I still think the Knicks will win. It'll be interesting to see what happens as the stretch continues to wind out. Speaking of stretches, winding out, the hockey playoffs also continue to go down to the wire. Interesting stuff going on for certain. Currently, the Rangers are up 3-1 in their series over the Hurricanes. We're going to get a sweep on Saturday, but Hurricanes won 4-3, said no, we're not getting swept. So props to them. Canucks are currently up in their series over the Oilers 2-1. Got a big win yesterday, 4-3. Panthers as well got a 3-2, or Panthers got a 3-2 win yesterday, and they now lead over the Bruins 3-1. Dallas Stars currently lead over the Avalanche 2-1. They got 4 goals in their Saturday win. So everything's kind of winding down in the NHL playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs. As we check in with the Canucks and the Oilers, it just appears that the Oilers are losing by a goal in almost every game that they play. I mean, game one lost by one, game two won by one, game three lost by one. It's been very hectic for them. It has been a fun series for everything that I've been seeing, especially in that overtime game. Who's the leading scorer in that game, if I can find it? Elias Patterson, he was getting goals. Brock Boeser, Matthias Ekholm, Nikita Zadorov. So a lot. Connor McDavid getting two goals. I mean, that's actually, I think that's series goals. Leon Draisaitl has had six series goals, if I'm not mistaken, from their win. And the Edmonton Oilers out shooting the Canucks in that win. But nothing else really going for them when it came to game number four. And I don't really know too much about the NHL playoffs, if I'm being honest. I can't really, it's hard for me to tell exactly what's going on. Stars, of course, are up 2-1. Same with the Canucks, as we just mentioned. And, you know, obviously the Stars and the Canucks are both the favorites to win in those matchups. When we look at the Eastern side of things, Panthers and Bruins are both series Panthers and Bruins are both favored to win. They both won, but the Panthers, your number one team, looking like they're going to advance. They're up 3-1. Same for the Rangers. I mean, they've only lost one playoff game in their eight games played so far. So in game number nine, looking to close out Carolina, who also beat the Islanders 4-1. It's just been repetition of wins when it comes to the NHL. Nothing too special. Nothing too special, if I'm being honest. I've heard the games are close, but the series are not looking to be very close, which does kind of put a damper, because you're like, hey, the series isn't close. I'm not going to see game sevens, and I want to see some game sevens. That's what I came to see. As we go down closer to the end, I'll probably do some more in-game depth look at the stats. But honestly, when I try and go on Google or the NHL website, it does not give me good stats. So I have to do a little digging. And with how busy I've been, I just haven't had the time to do some digging. I dig all my information out of the UFC. So that's all we get for our little NHL check-in. You're just informed that where the series stands for each of the matchups. But I'll tell you what, if you're not informed about UFC St. Louis, you're about to be very informed, because we are about to break down all the action from UFC St. Louis as we had, 13 fights or something? I think only one fell through in the weigh-ins. So let's kind of review the action and talk about what happened. And might I add, we were in our bag for predictions. We did so good. We did so good on this card for predictions. We were off on some fights we were a bit off on, but majority of them we kind of nailed. We kind of nailed a lot of these. I'm kind of proud of a lot of the things I predicted. So let's kick it off with our first prelim of the night, which ended up being, as we all knew, women's flyweight action, Veronica Hardy versus JJ Aldrich. And we said Veronica Hardy will win a decision. And what did Veronica Hardy do? Veronica Hardy, no nickname. She went out and got her ninth career victory, her third straight in the UFC. A little three-fight win streak now for Veronica Hardy as she beats JJ Aldrich by unanimous decision. 29-28, it's across the board. Quite honestly, nothing happened in this fight. Just a terrible way to open the card. Veronica outstrikes her in rounds one and two, gets outstruck in round three. Just an utter choke. 36 significant strikes to 27 in favor of Veronica Hardy. 69 total strikes at 38 in favor of Veronica Hardy. JJ Aldrich went 0-for-2 on takedowns, but got 5 minutes of control time from clinching. She might have won round three, but rounds one and two clearly went to Veronica Hardy as she gets it done. JJ Aldridge has her little two-fight winning streak snapped, so very unfortunate. She now falls to 13-7 professionally, and of those seven losses, five have came in the UFC. Veronica, though, good win for the 28-year-old from Venezuela. We knew she would get the friggin' decision win, and we friggin' called it. She's now 4-1 in her last five. Full three-fight win streak, as I previously mentioned. Good stuff for her. She's got some momentum. We'll see what's next for her. Obviously, a ranked opponent will not be in the cards yet, but I think this is a good positive momentum for Veronica Hardy. You'll move on from here, and who knows? If you go on a little four-fight win streak, you can definitely get a ranked opponent. Moving on to our next bout, flyweight matchup, and the hometown St. Louis boy, Charles Energy Johnson, gets it done. And we predicted by decision, and you bet your booty it was by decision. He beats Jake Hadley in good fashion. Good fashion to end the fight. It was a grind. It was a grind for sure. Jake Hadley did not make it easy, but Charles Johnson was not going to lose in front of his hometown of St. Louis as he gets his 15th 14th professional victory and his second straight win in the UFC, his fourth win in the UFC. And this was a guy who was on a three-fight losing streak, was in jeopardy of being cut in February, won that fight, and now he's back in May. Win streak, love to see it. Tale of this fight is that Charles Johnson just had it going. Defends 11 takedowns from Jake Hadley throughout the fight, 3 in round 1, 3 in round 2, and 5 in round 3. And by the way, in round 2, he even dropped Jake Hadley with a punch. Incredible stuff from Charles. He looked incredible here. Outstruck him 19-17 in round 1, 32-20, plus the knockdown in round 2, and even round 3, 29-11. Just phenomenal performance from Charles Johnson. I don't know if he's going to get a ranked opponent off of a win like this, but I certainly know they're going to keep him in the UFC. He had the crowd going, too, the St. Louis crowd. They love their hometown boys, and there was 3 St. Louis fighters on this card. They all won. You love to see it. I'm Jake Hadley. Tough loss. It's now 2 straight losses. You start out your career a perfect 8-0. He started his career out a perfect 8-0. Since then, he has gone 2-3, including 2 straight losses. Jake Hadley is not UFC caliber. Charles Johnson is UFC caliber. Good win for the 33-year-old from St. Louis, Missouri. Moving into our third fight of the evening, and even though I thought Trey Waters would get the knockout, this ended up being a fight of the night, and he gets the win over Billy Ray Goff. Great win by Trey the Truth Waters, his 9th career victory, and this is his second straight win by decision after previously having all his other fights be by finish. Little disappointing, but what more could you ask for in this one? A fight of the night. These two swung it out down to the wire. 30-27, 30-27, and 29-28 is the final scorecard. Round one, both men, 38 significant strikes. Billy Ray Goff landed his only takedown of the fight on 5 attempts. That was pretty much the whole gist of it. Round two, I mean, Billy Ray Goff teed off significant strike-wise, 51-31, but damage was going in favor of Trey Waters. This was one of those fights Trey Waters was landing less, but dealing more damage. Round three, both men landed 27 significant strikes, came down the judges' scorecard, and damage won it all the way. Good win in the welterweight division for Trey Waters. I'm happy to see it. As for Billy Ray Goff, you know, his first UFC loss, first loss in, gosh, I don't even know how long. He was on a 7-fight win streak, so very unfortunate for Billy Ray Goff. But by the way, he's a fight of the night. You both got 50K. I would not be too mad. They're both going to stick around in the UFC. Both dogs. D-A-double-G's. That's for certain. Fourth fight of the evening, and we had some ranked women's action as number 11, Tabitha Ritchie defended her ranked spot against Tisha Pennington. And let me say, I didn't catch this fight, and I'm so glad I didn't. I heard it was boring. I heard nothing happened. And looking at the stats, nothing did. Tisha Pennington outstrikes her significantly, 80-54. More total strikes to Tabitha Ritchie, 94-92. Tabitha goes one of 10 for 5 minutes and 15 seconds of control time. Tisha Pennington goes 0-2 on takedowns. So not the best fight. From what I heard, but Tabitha Ritchie gets the unanimous decision, 29-28 across the board. And mind you, even though she lost her last fight by split decision, she freaking now is 5-1 in her last 6. 5-2 in the UFC in general is impressive. She's currently ranked number 11th. She could move up to 10, could stay at 11. I think wherever she goes, she's going to be in good position. As for Tisha Pennington, this is now a 2-fight losing streak. You know, her last win was in August of 2021. I think it's time to call it. Tisha Pennington, I think it's time to call it. You're 34. You've had 2 finishes your entire professional career in 20 fights, only 2 finishes. Yeah, probably going to do it. Tabitha, she's younger. She's better. I mean, she's better. She's better looking as far as women fighters go. It's not really saying too much. They're all kind of manly, if I'm being honest. But, yeah, we'll leave that fight there. I'll tell you a fight that I wish I would have left alone. That is Esteban Ribovic and Terrence McKinney. And Terrence McKinney, I'm sorry. I am done putting faith in you. As Esteban Ribovic, I have no idea how this didn't get a performance of the night. I'm actually appalled that this didn't get a performance of the night, as Esteban Ribovic lands a KO of the year nominee in 37 seconds, knocks Terrence McKinney out cold with a head kick. I mean, he legit sat him down. Like, it looks like Terrence McKinney was, like, sat down in a chair on the ground. Esteban Ribovic make it his 7th career knockout. 7th career knockout. And by the way, of his 13 career wins, 12 finishes. Now 2-1 in the UFC, now on a 2-fight win streak. Esteban Ribovic, welcome to the men's lightweight division. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. He just sat him down. Literally just hits him square in the face before Terrence can even react, and he's out like a light. Out like a light. Terrence McKinney is now 15-7. All 22 fights have not gone the distance. His last three fights have ended in the first round. What's Terrence at now? I'd be curious to know. He has 1, 2, 3, 4 losses, and he has 1, 2, 5 wins. So 5 wins, 4 losses. This next fight could be the deciding factor for him. As for Esteban Hufta. Hufta Esteban, you can have any lightweight you so choose. You so choose, Esteban. Very impressive. Love seeing it. Should have got 50K. I have no idea why we did not give Esteban 50K. But I don't give out the decisions. I don't give out the bonuses. I just observe and I cheer. That's all I do. I observe and I cheer. Good job to Esteban, even though we did not predict it correctly. But we did predict the first 4 correct fights correctly. And mind you, we nailed all 3 fights that went by decision. I'll tell you what fight I also nailed, and that was Chase Hooper round 2 submission over Vyacheslav Borshev. We called it here on the podcast, and would have cashed so much money as Chase Hooper obliterates Vyacheslav Borshev. I thought Slava Claus was good. Clearly not. Clearly Chase Hooper is just leagues above everyone he fights. Listen to these stats from this fight. By the way, Chase Hooper landed a knockdown in round 1. Here's a guy who got dropped 3 times, not but 3 fights ago, and now he's out here dropping Vyacheslav Borshev. A knockdown for Chase Hooper. 62 significant strikes to 2, 129 total strikes to 2. Chase Hooper shot for 1 takedown, landed it, got 6 minutes of control time. 6 minutes of control time in a 8-minute fight. Come on. Come on, man. Just come on. 10-7 to Vyacheslav in round 1. Dropped him. 76 total strikes to 2. I mean, and then round 2, Chase Hooper just went across the cage, took him down immediately, not but 7 seconds in, dominated him. 53 total strikes to 0. Locks in a darce choke. And Vyacheslav tried to pull the old Brazilian tap where you tap the guy once on the back to try and get him to release. And the ref, I think, who was it? Was it Keith? It was Keith Peterson. He saw right through it, stopped the fight right away. Vyacheslav was going to get finished nonetheless. Chase Hooper, so impressive. Make it his 7th career finish by submission. And actually, what was that? That was his 11th career finish overall. 3-fight win streak now. 3-0 at lightweight. I don't know what to do with the guy. I honestly don't know. Paddy Pimblett could be in his future. He could fight Esteban Ribovic. I don't really know if there's a ranked lightweight I would just have him favorably fight. Rafael Dos Anjos feels like too big of a step. Even Jalen Turner feels like too big of a step. But Chase Hooper, you are trending in the right direction, my friend. You are trending in the right direction. Here's a kid who's been fighting in the UFC since he was 18 years old. He's now 24, and he's on a 3-fight win streak. Back-to-back submission wins. You love to see it. Great work, Chase. Great, great work. And I used to not even root for him. I didn't even pick him. I mean, I remember he was losing to Steven Pearson, losing to Steve Garcia, and now he's out here submitting Vyacheslav, and we called round 2 submission. Speaking of Vyacheslav, oh man, he's probably done. He started out his professional career 7-1. Since then, he has lost 3 fights, been submitted, been knocked down, been out-grappled. It is not looking good. It is not looking good. For Vyacheslav Borshev. I'd probably cut him. I'd probably say bye-bye, but they might keep him on. The UFC always likes to keep on some fighters, maybe on their prelims. So maybe you'll have one more shot, Vyacheslav. How about Vyacheslav versus Terrence McKinney? There's your fight. Vyacheslav Borshev versus Terrence McKinney. I just booked it. You're welcome. You're welcome, America. With that, we got into our main card. And when we got into the main card, I was pumped. I had only predicted 1 prelim incorrectly. I'd predicted almost all of them the correct way. The only one I did correctly predict was an absolute banger knockout. I wasn't mad at all. And thankfully, I was watching the movie I'm going to talk about next, and I missed the first 2 fights. I missed the first 2 fights of the main card, and they were both the 2 worst. They were both the 2 worst as Waldo Cortez Acosta took on Robeles Despange. And Robeles Despange, of course, 5-0, multiple knockouts under 10 seconds, an absolute killer. And son of a gun, he gets fraud checked, and Waldo Cortez Acosta gets the win. He's now 12-1, 3-fight win streak. oh my goodness, this fight was awful for Moisette. Even Dana White said, Dana White was pissed at how boring this fight was, and he said Waldo Cortez Acosta will not get a ranked opponent, nothing will happen to him. Heck, Waldo Cortez Acosta might be fighting Derek Lewis next, just so he can get knocked out. Totals from the fight, 52 significant strikes to 26 in favor of Waldo Cortez Acosta, 130 total strikes to 28 in favor of Waldo Cortez Acosta. Waldo goes 3 of 4 on takedowns for 9 minutes and 49 seconds. The first round, Waldo just wanted to get the fight to the ground, never was barely even able to get hit. I think Robles' 2 significant strikes came from the ground. 4 minutes, 32 seconds of control time. Round 2, Waldo just had him up against the cage, 2 minutes, 44 seconds control time. In round 3, same scenario, was just avoiding getting hit. Robles got gassed, and wow. Honestly, both of these guys were so bad in this one. Robles, it's such a shame. He had so much potential, but there's lots of guys Robles could fight. Have him fight Junior Taffa. Those are both 2 strikers. And as for Waldo Cortez Acosta, I think they were having him fight the guy that Derek Lewis beat in the main event. So that could be a potential option. Other than that, I mean, have him fight Alexander Romanov. I don't know what to do with this. So boring. So brutal. But you know what? Waldo, he's on a 3-fight win streak. You know, even if the fights suck, you can still go, hey, he's on a little 3-fight win streak. So, boring way to open the card. And it didn't get much better. Sean Woodson took on Alex Caceres, and he was the hometown boy. And we changed our pick from Alex Caceres to Sean Woodson live on the podcast. And it paid off. Sean Woodson by decision. He gets it done. Sean the Sniper Woodson, 12th career victory. He has 2 wins, a draw, then 3 wins. So technically, that's a 6-fight unbeaten streak. I'd consider it a 5-fight win streak. Impressive stuff. Gets it done, just did exactly what he has done in every single fight, casually outboxes his opponent, and he was a hometown guy in St. Louis. They were all happy for him, happy to see it. Round 1, Sean Woodson outstrikes him 31-18, round 2, Caceres outstrikes him 32-31, and round 3, Sean Woodson outstrikes him 39-32, 29-28 across the board, except for Henry Gurry whipping out 30-27, very sketchy. Very sketchy when the hometown guy gets a scorecard that shouldn't be how it is. It always happens every single time there's a crowd. But yeah. Yeah, good win for Sean. As for Caceres, now on a 2-fight losing streak. Kind of feel bad for him. 2-3 his last 5. But Sean Woodson, trendy in the right direction. Could get a ranked opponent, honestly. I give him a ranked opponent. How about number 15th ranked Sodiq Youssef? How about number 12 ranked Bryce Mitchell? He called out Bryce Mitchell. Bryce Mitchell said, yeah, I'll fight him. I want to make money. I say that's a great fight. And whether you like Sean Woodson or not, you kind of got to pick him. You got to look at the guy's skill set and go, hey, he's bigger than all the other featherweights. He's got a longer reach, and his style is hard to beat. I think Bryce Mitchell is kind of the only style that can beat him. If you got either be a power puncher or a grappler to beat him. Bryce Mitchell's the grappler version, so we'll see what occurs. Caceres, you're getting up there in age, my man. You're 35. You know, you just lost the decision again. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm excited to see where both these guys go. Also, kind of a Sean Woodson fan now. Not really like a huge fan, but I respect him. Fight next up, an absolute banger. I can't believe I missed this one. I'm so sad I missed this fight. As the 39-year-old Diego Ferreira beats the 31-year-old Matheus Rebecki, who was on a 16-fight win streak. And what makes it even better is he lost the first round. We go to round 1. Diego Ferreira is down. Matheus Rebecki drops him. All right, drops him with a punch, outstrikes him 30-21. It's looking bleak. Diego Ferreira turns it around, 40 significant strikes to 16 in round 2. Matheus landed 3 takedowns, but Diego just kept getting back up. He landed his own takedown. Then round 3, Diego lands 2 takedowns, gets in control. 62 significant strikes to 6 is 10-8ing him before finally with 9 seconds left, as Matheus Rebecki's face looks like a balloon that's about to pop, he gets the win. Diego Ferreira, how about that? His 5th career knockout, his 12th career finish. Incredible. Incredible from the 39-year-old. I can't even believe it. All right, here's a guy who is gone for 2 years, returns in May of last year, round two knockout, returns back in May this year, round three TKO, two-fight win streak, two finishes, a 50K performance of the night. Diego Vieira, I'm so sad I didn't pick you. I should have rode with him. I should have rode with him, but Matheus Rebeque, you know, he was 3-0 in the UFC, 16-fight win streak, all the finishes, and man, he was just a one-round warrior. Diego Vieira. I love you. I love you, man. That was an absolute fire matchup. I don't necessarily know if we're going to give him a ranked opponent next. I mean, him versus Rafael dos Anjos could be a fun fight. Him versus Benoit Saint-Denis, Jalen Turner, a lot of fun options, but he is 39. Let's be realistic. How about him versus Jim Miller? Him versus Jim Miller could be a crazy good fight. Two guys up there in age in the lightweight division. I think that could be next. As for Matheus Rebeque, I mean, like I said, you got Esteban Revovovich on this card. You got Terrence McKinney, Vyacheslav Borshev. Clearly, Matheus Rebeque is just not ready for someone of high-level skill like Diego Vieira. I mean, this guy was fighting Nick Fiore, Loic Radziboev, Roosevelt Robarts, and now he's fighting Diego Vieira, who took Beneil Dariush to close decisions. Yeah, we should have seen the signs. We should have seen the signs. We always should have. Should have seen it in the co-main event, but we had one more fight before the co-main event, and son of a gun, we nailed it. Round one KO. This fight was absolutely glorious as Carlos Ullberg knocks out Alonzo Menafield in 12 seconds. 12 seconds, Carlos Ullberg knocks out Alonzo Menafield. Alonzo blitzes him for some reason, gets clipped, slips, gets caught again, drops, couple follow-up punches, but seven significant strikes. I mean, it took seven strikes to knock Alonzo Menafield out. Carlos Ullberg is a killer, and we called it. His seventh career knockout, his eighth career finish. He's now 11-1 professionally and is on a six-fight win streak, a five-fight finish streak, with four of those being round one knockouts. I can't believe it. I'm getting so excited right now. Carlos Ullberg, the Black Jag, such a badass, such a dog. Love to see it. Alonzo, what was your game plan, buddy? What was your game plan? He rushes him, keeps getting caught, just was not working out. Carlos Ullberg, happy to see it. Alonzo Menafield was also ranked number 11th, so Carlos Ullberg definitely going to be taking his spot in the rankings. Definitely excited to see that. Let me tell you, I mean, definitely excited to see Carlos Ullberg in the rankings at number 11. Alonzo Menafield, probably drop him down to 13, 14, maybe even kick him off the rankings. Pitiful performance. Very embarrassing if you ask me, but man, Carlos Ullberg, an absolute dog. Alonzo Menafield, the snaps a five-fight unbeaten streak for him. Ugh, that is just sad to see. But good stuff from Carlos Ullberg. Amazing, amazing work. What could be next for Carlos? Number 10 ranked Anthony Smith, winner of Johnny Walker and Volkan Ozdemir, Bogdan Guskov, Nikita Krylov, Alexander Rakic. The options are limited. That's for Alonzo Menafield. Probably, maybe even Bogdan Guskov or Azamat Mirzakhanov, Dominic Reyes. I don't even care who he fights, but I was entertained nonetheless, and I predicted it too. I predicted it too, and Carlos Ullberg was leaping around in my living room, just going, oh my gosh, my family and girlfriend were looking at me like, what is wrong with this kid? And I'm like, Carlos Ullberg just got a knockout. I'll tell you, that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. Then we got to the co-main event. This was a weird one. First off, Nursultan Ruzaboyev should stay at middleweight. Nursultan Ruzaboyev has a padded record. Okay, clearly Joaquin Buckley is pretty good. Clearly, Joaquin Buckley has some level of intelligence as he gets the win. He gets the win. Joaquin Buckley is now 19-6, four-fight win streak, 4-0 at welterweight. He was ranked number 11th. I'd move him up to number 10 in the rankings. Very impressive win. But with that, Nursultan Ruzaboyev is now 34-9. I mean, so not too bad. But with this win, with Joaquin Buckley getting the unanimous decision win, there was still very little IQ in this fight from both men. It was a very weird fight. I don't even know where to begin with this one. Round one, Joaquin Buckley casually had more significant strikes, 8-7. Nursultan had more total strikes, 11-8. Joaquin landed two takedowns, both attempts for 1:16 of control time, which is probably what won him the round. Nursultan was able to get up both times. Round two, kind of similar scenario. Joaquin barely outstrikes him, 14-8. 2 of 2 on takedowns, 1:42 of control time, and that was that. I mean, Joaquin was up two rounds probably, not really decisively, but it was like, okay, nothing else happened, so we can't really, like, get, I don't know, judge much. And then round three is getting kicked off, and Joaquin Buckley drops Nil Soon. I don't even know how it happened. I'm actually trying to remember what he hit him with. It might have been a straight, might have been a little hook or something, but Nil Soon got dropped. Joaquin Buckley pounced on him, and just Keith Pearson gave Nil Soon so much time to recover, and he was able to. And Nil Soon reversed it on top to get on top of Joaquin Buckley in guard for 30 seconds. It was absolutely crazy. He then got reversed again. Totals for the final round, 64 significant strikes to 16, 82 total strikes to 17, 2.5 minutes of control time for Joaquin Buckley. He gets the decision win. He gets the decision win. Numancia gets it done. But just, he had so many opportunities to finish, could never execute. Almost, thankfully, Nursin Ruzubov was an absolute tin can and didn't know what to do once he got back into guard. I mean, reversals. Nursin Ruzubov kept reversing what Joaquin Buckley did, but Joaquin Buckley gets it done. And then goes on the mic and calls out Conor McGregor. I think everyone was just kind of face-palming. Like, what are you doing? Like, sometimes it's funny to call out Conor McGregor, but when, like, you realistically know you'll never fight Conor McGregor, it was kind of dumb. Look, I think everyone's kind of agreeing he should fight number 6th-ranked Gilbert Burns. That's kind of like the fight that makes sense, but I don't know what to do. Nursultan Ruzubayev, go back up to middleweight. Just take some time. I don't even know what to do with you. I don't even know, but you know what? Joaquin Buckley, good win. You dominated, even though you almost lost a couple of times. With that, we got into the main event, and holy cow, it was tough. It was a tough one, guys. It was tough from the get-go as number 12-ranked Derek Lewis took on number 15th Rodrigo Nascimento. And oh man, this one was really just, please don't let this happen. Please don't let this happen, but we're going to round one. Round one, Derek Lewis clearly had more power than Rodrigo Nascimento, but for some reason landed a takedown. Then Rodrigo Nascimento got right back up, landed a takedown of his own, dominated Derek Lewis to end the round. We were kind of just going, okay, that sucks. Rodrigo Nascimento just won round one. Thought he was going to get submitted. We go to round two. Derek Lewis is clearly better than Rodrigo Nascimento on the feet. Clearly better. And then Rodrigo Nascimento catches Derek Lewis slipping, takes his back, but thank goodness Derek Lewis is able to get up. He outstrikes him significantly, 17-12, probably giving him the final round, but it was still going, okay, please do not let this be the end of Derek Lewis. We get to round three, and Derek Lewis finally lets the fist fly, knocks out Rodrigo Nascimento 49 seconds in. Rodrigo didn't even land a strike in round three. And first off, might I just add, Rodrigo Nascimento does not know how to strike. He barely threw any significant strikes in this fight. 27, those were probably all from in his half-guard control in round one. Just a pitiful performance, but Derek Lewis thankfully gets it done. Thankfully gets the knockout. His 28th career win. I think it was his 15th career knockout in the UFC. In the career-wise, 23rd knockout. The Black Beast wins. And the Black Beast goes crazy after he wins. He throws his cup into the crowd. He takes off his pants. He moons the crowd. He freaking says he's in his prime. Then he says, I'm not in my prime. I want to go into WWE. Derek Lewis is a national treasure. Absolutely love him. Absolutely love him. Who knows what's next for him, but as long as he won, thank goodness. All was right in the world. All was right in the world since Derek Lewis won. He was ranked 12. I'd move him up to 10. Jerzinho Rozenstruik hasn't won in a while. Tai Tuivasa hasn't won in a while. I'd move him up to 10. I think him versus Tai Tuivasa or Jerzinho Rozenstruik could both be good fights. I guarantee both of those fights will just be striking battles. As for Rodrigo Nascimento, I think him versus Waldo Cortez Acosta seems to be the play the UFC might go with. But man, oh man. Embarrassing. It was going to be embarrassing if Derek Lewis lost again by being outgrappled. Thankfully, he didn't. Thankfully, he gets it done. Didn't get a performance bonus. I'd give him a performance bonus. I just love Derek Lewis that much, but it is what it is. We will leave UFC St. Louis where it is at, but we nailed a lot of predictions. I mean, Derek Lewis by knockout we had. Carl Suberg by knockout we had. Sean Woodson decision. Chase Hooper round two submission. Tabitha Ritchie decision. Charles Johnson decision. I mean, we nailed a lot on this card. Happy with my predictions. Happy with it being that it was in front of a crowd. And the fact it was in front of a crowd makes it a lot better. So that's good. That's great. I love to see it. So we will leave that there. We will go back to the Apex, unfortunately. But the Apex events are winding down. And this is our first UFC event Our last UFC event for a while, as we take Memorial Day off. We'll be back in June to kick off with UFC 302, but we'll be ending the month with a little Edson Barboza versus Lerone Murphy. Of course, Edson Barboza, legend, the knockouts, the fights of the nights, takes on Lerone Murphy, who is the 13-0 undefeated British fighter, looking to finally get into the rankings, looking to finally get his big win. We'll see if he's worthy of being ranked in the UFC. Should be a tough fight for him. Also on this card, I mean, you got Themba Garimbo, the man who The Rock gave a house. Adrian Yanez looking to get back in the win column. Tom Nolan gets one last shot in the UFC. The return of Abusmagomedov, the man who's knocked men out in 19 seconds, been knocked out by Sean Strickland in round two. We'll see how he does. Other than that, you know, it's an apex card. It is a UFC apex card. I don't know what more you could expect from cards like these, but exciting stuff. Good times. UFC St. Louis, I give you a 7 out of 10. You weren't too bad. You fulfilled your job. So, thank you. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we get into the final part of this podcast. It's rare we don't end covering a UFC event. I think we hardly ever do that, but I was just too excited to not talk about this. This is a spoiler. This is not spoiler-free. This is spoilers being said. I am spoiling stuff about this movie, as here's my official review of the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes movie, which I saw Saturday with my beloved girlfriend. And let me just tell you, it did not disappoint me. I was going in thinking it was going to be a 10 out of 10. I knew it wasn't going to be a 10 out of 10. I'm leaving. It's an 8.3 out of 10. 8.3 out of 10. I think the critics are right. I think Rotten Tomatoes is right. This is a good movie. It's above good. It's a great movie. It's a great movie. It's not getting a 9 out of 10. It's not getting an 8. It's between an 8 and a 9. Okay, it's in that decimal category. It's a very good movie. It's a good continuation of the Planet of the Apes saga. It does justice to the original trilogy, my favorite trilogy of all time. I love the Lord of the Rings. I love the Hobbit. But there's just something about the Planet of the Apes trilogy that just resonates with me. I don't know. It's just up there for me. The motion capture, the CGI in this film. The CGI in this film makes me question what is reality. I mean, these look like real apes. They look like real apes are talking. The forest, the broken down cities, everything, it looks so real. Even the water is CGI and it looks real. Incredible. I loved it. And the characters. The characters, simply amazing. Simply amazing. So, basically, to kick us off, Owen Teague, all right? He's the new main guy. He's not the Caesar of this trilogy, but he's essentially is the Caesar, and the fact he's the main ape, he's the main character, and his character's great. He goes through a great change throughout his family, to basically take you through the entire plot of the movie without spoiling too much. This ape Noah, this movie takes place a lot of generations after Caesar. And the movie actually starts off with a little tribute to Caesar, which is absolutely incredible. You see his son Cornelius, you see Maurice, you see Rocket one last time as they burn Caesar's body on an effigy, you know, like what the Vikings used to do. They put them all up on a wooden thing, the dead body, and they burned it, all right? And they saw, like, the windowsill, you know, the symbol of Caesar. It's kind of like whatever that symbol is. Looks like a diamond. That symbol's still in the ape world today. They do, like, the fist pumping together in the air, such as Ape Strong Together. Such a touching way to open up the film. I absolutely loved it. I did not see it coming. My eyes were kind of getting teary. I was like, man, my boy Caesar, because Caesar is essentially an ape god. He's an ape legend. He is the Moses, the Jesus to the apes. He's God to the apes. That's what he is. And it's absolutely amazing to see him being honored. But an important theme throughout the movie is there's people that honor him in a good way, and people that honor him in a bad way, and that is a very prominent theme throughout the whole film. So we kick it off. It's 300 years after Caesar. It says many generations, but the director, Westball, amazing director, directed the Maze Runner films, amazing. He even confirmed it's 300 years after. So you got Noah, this ape, and he's in this eagle clan where they essentially raise eagles, you know, as pets, you know, so they kind of like come on their arms, they're like, they scavenge ahead of them, you know, it's realistic things. And the movie kind of kicks off in this very crazy scene where Noah's the ape, of course, and his friends Anya, who's like a love interest, I think, and Suna, who's like a younger brother, you know, a little friend of sorts, and they're searching for these eggs, and it shows Noah climbing to the top of this abandoned tower, and it's just really cool opening, the CGI is great, and, you know, they get back to the village, and everything's all good, and then these raiders come, I mean, Raiders come to the village, and they burn the whole village. Noah, spoiler alert, his dad dies. You know, it's kind of like a character arc thing right there. His father is killed in front of him, and he vows justice. He vows justice. He's going to find whoever did this to his father. And an interesting thing throughout this whole film is that the bad guys keep dedicating everything they're doing to Caesar. And it's sort of just a very interesting thing where it's like people twist the past. It's exactly what you're doing here. And the main villain who we'll get to just twists the words of Caesar, the great Caesar. And one of the main villains in this film is an ape called Silva. And he is the chief commander of Proximus, the main villain's army. And he is so menacing every time he's chasing or fighting. I absolutely loved it. If you felt like a real gorilla was chasing after you and you're like, okay, I'm going to die. The heart was pounding. Amazing work. Amazing work from the CGI team. Amazing work from the director, from Wes Ball. I absolutely loved it. So Noah, he's going on this journey, abandoning through the land. He doesn't even call humans humans. He calls them echoes because the apes, they don't know the real history of the planet. And he runs into this orangutan named Raka. And Raka, one of my favorite characters of this movie, an amazing, amazing character. He's played by Peter McCoon. Amazing work. He played in, he was in The Orville on Fox and Hulu television. Probably the best role that he's been in. And Noah, they're going on this journey. And as they're going on this journey to, where Proximus Caesar, the villain, is, Proximus Caesar is to find his family, Raka's like, I'll join you. And Raka's the last of the apes that know the real history of how they all came to be. He's the last of the people that truly follow Caesar's teachings. It is very powerful, everything he talks about. And along the way, they run into this girl, and her name is May. And, you know, the raiders, she says, took her clan to a beachfront settlement located outside an old human vault. And, you know, you eventually just think, okay, this is the stereotypical human girl they just throw along. They did this in, they do this in every movie. They do this in the Transformers movies. They do it in Marvel movies. They do it in, they did it in the Planet of the Apes movies. They always throw a human character in here, but this one just takes a plot twist that I did not really see coming. I did not really see this one coming. So you have May, you have Raka, and you have Noah. They're all traveling along, okay? And along the way, Silva, this war leader of the apes, and all of his companions, they keep chasing them. Eventually, they catch up to him on a bridge. And in the ensuing fight, Raka saves May from drowning, but Silva causes Raka to fall into the river and get swept away by the rapids. So you kind of think that Raka's dead. He very well could be dead. He had a very sad ending, kind of giving his relic around his neck to Noah, saying, carry this on for me. It was Caesar's symbol, if you will. And Raka could be dead, but I've heard rumors that in the post credits, there's no post credit scene, by the way, but in the post credits, you kind of hear like breathing, like of an ape, like barely still alive, and people are saying it's Raka, which could be the case, could be Proximus Caesar, who we'll get to in a moment, but I really hope Raka's still alive, because he was an amazing character, but he sacrifices himself, and they are brought to this settlement. They are brought to this camp, which is the kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and we are introduced to the ape king, Proximus Caesar, who is one of those villains. He's one of those villains. I think you can compare him to, I'm trying to think, a lot of, the Joker, actually the Joker had a big role in a film, those villains where it's like, they deserve more, they're such a good villain, they should be in the film more, such as, the Black Panther villain. The Black Panther villain's a great example. Who did Michael B. Jordan play? Killmonger. How he's in the film, but he's not in it enough. He's not in enough, and he only lasts for one film. That's what Proximus Caesar is like. He's an amazing villain. Kevin Durand is so good as Proximus Caesar. He's given me Austin Butler and Elvis vibes, where he's just become this character and how he speaks in real life. Absolutely love it. And Proximus Caesar's goal is to get into a vault. He said there's a vault in there that's human technology that can change the apes, change them for good. And May also runs into another human while she's being kept prisoner, and that's Trevathan, who is actually the dad from, oh my gosh, what's it called, guys? It's William H. Macy. He was in Fargo. He was in Boogie Nights. He was in Shameless. Oh my gosh, it's the dad. It's the dad from Shameless, whatever his face is. He's in this, and he's kind of just, Proximus Caesar found him, took him in. He reads some stories about old Roman times, which is why, his name is Proximus. His last name is Caesar. His name is Proximus. He chose the name Caesar because, Caesar's like this ape god. It's like that. And basically, May's like, we cannot let him get into the vault because she knows what's in the vault. So Noah, she's like, okay, there's a book in there. There's a book in there that is capable of restoring speech to humanity. So she's like, oh, and Noah's like, okay, so I'll help her. I'll help her gain access to the vault, and that way he can destroy Proximus and Solomon and lead his clan back home. Because obviously Proximus brought a bunch of different clans under his control, but all Noah wants to do is bring his ape clan back to where they were from. Because it was all burned down, he needs to rebuild. So Noah, May, he gets his old friends who, had been captured earlier on in the film, Suna and Anna, to secretly plant explosives around the sea levee that kind of surrounded the vault and summit. They built like a levee by the sea, which is where their camp was, and they sneak in. They climb up this giant thing, but before that, actually, May kills Trevathan. She kills the dad from Shameless. This little girl kills, I actually have no idea how old May is in the film, gotta be a teenager, and she kills him, and it's really this dark moment where you're kind of like, oh my gosh, she's actually choking him out, and you can even see the ape's face being shocked by it. But anyways, the group, they climb up this mountain, they get into the secret entrance. The vault is revealed to be a military bunker housing a stockpile of weapons. There's old classrooms in there and stuff, because it was where humans hid towards the beginning of the outbreak. And May's book is soon discovered to be a key for a satellite, which you don't find out till the end of the film. It's this key, though. And the apes soon become suspicious of May when they discover old picture books depicting humans as the once dominant species with apes in cages at the zoo. The foreshadowing, I already know, is crazy in this film. As they're heading out of the bunker, they're about to escape. They open the bunker doors. The whole goal is to just blow it and run out. Proximus appears, and his tribe, who threaten to kill Noah, Proximus's tribe, but they're stopped when May uses a gun to shoot one of the other like bad apes. I think its name is listed as Lightning. It was just one of the background apes who's like, oh, he's the bad ape. But she shoots him, and Proximus agrees to let May leave if she tells him where the other weapons are. May refuses and triggers the explosives, flooding the bunker while the apes are still inside. And you truly see here that May hates the apes and wants them all to die. She deceived Noah. And soon, the apes have to climb the higher ground, and this intense scene where Noah is being pursued by the gorilla in this film is just so intense, and Noah traps him and drowns him. And there's this moment where the gorilla is being covered in water, and he sticks out his hand, and Noah just looks at it, because Raka told him, ape don't kill ape, but as we've learned, the teachings of Caesar are not prominent in today's age with the apes. Very intense. Noah, he escapes with his clan to the top of the bunker, and as he's leaving, he's attacked by Proximus Caesar, and Proximus demands that Noah kneel before him before he kills him. But Noah soon does this chant, which I'm not gonna do. I know y'all want me to do the chant that he's doing, but he does this chant, and soon his whole clan joins in. And basically, his father's eagle, who always hated Noah, he always would scratch at him, who after his father had died had just followed Noah around, finally goes on to Noah's arm as it's like he's become his eagle. And they, all of the clan's eagles, are attacking Proximus, and he is kind of sent off this cliff into the water to his apparent death. But just like Raka, if you don't see a character die in a movie, you can always assume that they're still alive. And even sometimes when they die, you can assume, oh, they can be brought back. But Proximus Caesar apparently dies. He's all dead, he's gone, and Noah returns home to rebuild their clan. But May shows up. She shows up to say goodbye to Noah. This is a bit later, once they're all back. And she explains that humans deserve another chance since they were once the dominant species. But Noah questions if apes and humans can coexist peacefully, which is very powerful. That is something Caesar always wanted, and Noah didn't even know about that. So as the film ends out, you see Noah kind of bringing Sunya, who's kind of his love interest throughout the film, this other ape, to this telescope to look through it, and you see all the stars. And as as the movie ends, May travels to a secret human settlement at a satellite base, delivering that decipher key, which then enables the humans in there to activate the satellites and successfully contact other humans across the U.S. Very crazy ending. I can tell they're already setting up something that is the old movies. The old movies, they were like people in space, and you know, they came to the planet and they eventually fought the apes. So I can tell they're setting up something like that. But as for this movie, kind of ends with a little ominous ending. I very much enjoyed it though. CGI was spectacular, as I said. I cannot get over it. It just looks so good. The movie, okay, if we're going through the three acts of the film, the first act very slow. Very world building. Second act, starting to pick up, very world building. Third act brings it home. So the third act, it brought the movie home. The ending of the movie was fantastic. The entire third act, phenomenal. Second act of the movie was certainly 50-50. But it's not like the opening was bad. It's not like the movie was bad when it started out. It was just kind of slow. You can just kind of tell. They're introducing all these characters. They're building background. And they're doing callbacks to the previous movies. They're giving little Easter eggs about space. They're giving little Easter eggs about what could come in the future. But all I know is that the legacy of Caesar is just such a huge impact in the April that's going to just draw a lot of things into conclusion. I don't know what's going to happen in the next film. There's one thing that's for certain. That's this is the beginning film of a new trilogy. The film has been out since Friday. Already has $131 million of its $160 million budget. So without a doubt, in the next month or so, definitely going to break even. Probably make them a good amount of profit. This was actually the biggest opening weekend of any Planet of the Apes movie. The current plan right now is for a nine ape saga, similar to Fast and the Furious, if you will. And they've already done four movies. They've been four great movies. It's just, as a fan of the trilogy, this was not better than the past trilogy. It might have been better than the opening movie. It might have been better than Rise of the Planet of the Apes, but it's not better than Dawn. It's not better than War. Because you see, with Dawn, Dawn's an amazing movie if you just watch it. Like, you don't even have to know about the Planet of the Apes to watch it. War is just, if you love the Planet of the Apes movies, if you love Caesar, War is an emotional film. War has a lot of deep themes in it. This film, it's kind of like dystopian future with a planet of apes. You know, the apes are essentially like people. They all have their different tribes. They all aren't united under one banner. So we'll see what happens, but I'm intrigued to see where the franchise goes. This, like I said, gets an 8.3. Dare I even bump it up to an 8.5 out of 10. Kingdom of the Planet Apes is fantastic. It is 2.5 hours, just under 2.5 hours. So I do warn you about that. But good movie to see with your friends, good movie to see with the girlfriend. Yeah, even if your family likes movies like that, I encourage everyone to go see it. I, without a doubt, will probably be getting it on DVD. I'm such a sucker for these ape movies. I'm going to be 30 years old with my kids going to see the final Planet of the Apes movie. It's pretty funny, but good times watching Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And that'll do it, ladies and gentlemen. That'll do it for today's episode. Nice little hour episode. You know, I'm tired after work, man. I still have to go to the gym. I haven't gone to the gym in so long. I definitely need to go after work tomorrow. But 33 year with the girlfriend's coming up. A lot of exciting things going on in life. And without a doubt, we will be back to drop predictions for UFC Vegas. What are we at now? UFC Vegas 92, maybe? Gosh, 91? I'm losing track of how many Apex events the UFC puts on. But new episode should be out Thursday or maybe even Friday. We shall see. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. Have an amazing week. Make this the best week of your life. I'm going to try to. You know, I'm going to try. I got to stay busy every day at work. You know, I'm a corporate man now. I'm a corporate American man. I'm blue collar. Or I'm white collar. I'm not blue collar anymore. I'm white collar. I'll stop yapping. I'll stop keeping y'all here. Ladies and gentlemen, I will catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.